Two Designers Walk Into a Bar is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network.
For more information about our show or to discover more podcasts you'll enjoy, visit evergreenpodcasts.com.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Yeah, the internet was not even a gleam in Tim Berners-Lee's eyes. Shit, that's not worth the joke.
Even Tim Berners-Lee
forget
would laugh
that.
At that. Yeah, he'd be like, huh.
I know.
He'd be like, you stepped in it.
I know.
Hey, everyone. It's Elliot.
And Todd. Welcome to Two Designers Walk Into a Bar, an ongoing conversation about pop culture and iconic design.
From the punkish late 70s into the plastic early 80s, the new wave movement affected design, fine art, movies, and of course, music.
This season, we're unpacking how it was synthesized.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yep. And how it came to have amazing effects on all things 80s and into pop culture today.
So ask your favorite Top Gun cocktail slinger to whip up some B-52s, point out your Galaga High score to the other bar patrons,
and join us as we pogo back into the bar. All right, Elliot, in our last episode, you talked about New Wave and the boob tube. You said boob. And how the fresh styles
of synth rock. Todd.
Yeah?
Boobs always come in twos, and our podcast is living proof.
You just thought of that, didn't you?
I did.
That's great. But what you were talking about was that shows like MTV... and Miami Vice were starting to combine that 80s pop synth rock, and we were hearing sounds and it was turning into the visuals to go with those sounds.
Heck yeah, man. Crockett and Tubbs, baby.
Yeah.
Exactly. It was the first mass media marriage of music, visual style. I mean, video killed the radio star after all, right?
That's what I heard. And we talked about just bringing people back up. If you haven't heard the past couple episodes, go back and listen. But to catch up real quick, we talked about New Wave as the nerdier, less aggro sibling of punk. The style was avant-garde, it was flashy and unconventional, and New Wave was even called art school experimental.
Hold on a second, who called it that?
Me, dude. Didn't you just hear me?
Oh.
Art school experimental meant everything was fresh by being mismatched and clashing bold patterns. Unconventional color combinations, and if you had seen it before, the idea was start over.
Mm-hmm. Literally, the lyrics to Rip It Up by the new wave band Orange Juice could be described, in that very ethos, right? Rip it up and start again.
Yeah, you nailed it, man. And remember what the Buggles were wearing on the first MTV video that you just referenced?
Yeah, absolutely. Bright silver suits, bug-eyed sunglasses, right?
Yeah, I wonder why that didn't catch on. Two words, shoulder pads.
Mm-hmm. Like the big suit, right, from Talking Heads, yep. Stop Making Sense, which, of course, was recently back out in theaters. The ultimate in shoulder pads, sure, yeah. So who do you think represented some of the best new wave fashion icons of the period?
Well, these are probably pretty easy to identify. Think like Debbie Harry from Blondie or... Alana Curry from the Thompson Twins,
sure.
The big piled up hair. Martin Gore from Depeche Mode, and even Dave Sylvian from Japan. Duran Duran, the whole band.
Yeah, everybody.
Susie Sue was a little on the punk side,
sure.
With the eyeliner. And of course, who can forget the look that Cyndi Lauper and Boy George had going on. And, Bananarama, Madonna-rama, all of them, man.
Yeah, two words, eyeliner, right? Or in the case of a lot of the bands you just named, it might be guyliner. Although that really, phrase came into pop culture much, much later.
That's true. That's true. When it got out of hand, I think. Let's put some order to this so the listeners don't think they're listening to a Grammys red carpet lineup from 1983, because I'm sure that was fun. There are a few fashion brands that rose to popularity in the new wave era and continued to have pop culture influence after. And the first one that comes to my mind is Vans checkerboard slip-ons.
Oh, yeah.
You know them well, right?
Spicoli, Jeff Spicoli, yeah.
These simple canvas boat shoes with black and white checker patterns covering the whole shoe. And Elliot, you're a skater. You've talked about that plenty of times. So I bet you had them.
You know, actually, I didn't. I was an Airwalk man. First, I started with Chuck Taylor's, you know, Converse All-Stars.
Yeah.
Then I went to Airwalk. It wasn't until much later that I wore Vans.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm confessing my sins, I guess. My 80s bona fides. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, you would admit, though, even though you didn't have those, you would admit that it's iconic and instantly recognizable print. And do you know how the Vans checkerboard became the look for generations of skaters and streetwear fans alike?
I would say it's everyone's favorite hot boxing in a van stoner, Jeff Spicoli. Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Yeah, his ongoing feud with Mr. Hand. Oh, yeah, know it well.
That's why they became so popular after the movie's, 1982 release, I think. But the classic shoe was born a bit before that. Here's our, 20-second flashback.
Well, wait. If we're doing a flashback, I got to jump in here for a second. I remember correctly, and I'm going to quiz you real fast.
All right.
Do you remember who two of his stoner buddies were, like the actors were?
No, I don't.
I know one of them was Nicolas Cage, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think another one was Eric Stoltz.
Really? Okay.
I think so. Yeah. I need to look that up. So we'll edit this out if it's not true. And if listeners, you're hearing it, that means it was true.
If you happen to hear it, consider we thought it was true.
Yeah. And Elliot's bar brilliance shines through yet again.
To talk about the origin of Vans, that started as the Van Doren Rubber Company of Anaheim, California in 1966, believe it or not. Started by Paul Van Doren, his brother Jim, and of course, friends Gordy and Serge. You got to have friends Gordy and Serge.
I think that might have been Nick Cage and Eric Stoltz's character names in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
That would make sense, wouldn't it? And what made them different is they manufactured shoes on site and sold them directly to the public through the slogan, canvas shoes for the entire family. I don't think they said it like that, but I just added a little drama. But here's the funny thing. Like within a week of being open, a customer brought in their own fabric and said, can you make some shoes out of this? And the Vans customization was born with that.
So crazy. They were really the first ones to do custom shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is well before the internet, kids.
Yeah. But then flash forward a little bit to 1976, and that white canvas slip-on, like the blank canvas, was invented and became very popular with teen skaters.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. The soles were nice and chunky and thick, right? That waffle sole. And the white canvas of the shoe, I mean, canvas in the truest sense, right? It begged to be decorated. Get out your paint pens, get out your Sharpies, whatever. Start drawing on the suckers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so Van Doren noticed that the teens were coloring their shoes with this checkerboard design and decided to print the pattern on the upper part of the shoe. So always observing, good, see what your market's doing.
Yep,
picked it up, ran with it. And quicker than you can say, a gnarly ollie with a Benihana, a classic skater and surfer shoe, was born. But the shoes may not have left Cali if it wasn't for two things. You already mentioned one.
Was it Hibachi? So you said Benihana. I'm still focused on that. I'm kind of. We need to figure out how to get Hibachi here in the bar.
God, that would be so good right now, wouldn't it?
It really would. Anyway, that's beside the point. I think what you're hinting at is my Jeff Spicoli comment.
Yes, yeah, because Fast Times at Ridgemont High was the first major teen movie of the 80s. And Sean Penn, who obviously played Spicoli, as you mentioned, he personally picked out that style to reflect the character of the stone Southern California surfer. But so post Fast Times, sales of Vans skyrocketed and the brand became a household name virtually overnight. But let's bust a little bubble here.
Oh boy, here we go.
Okay, it's not that bad. It was one of the very first product placements in a movie ever. And I believe that marketing trend has continued to thrive. What say you?
Yeah, I think it just might have, paved the way for, I think it's happened in one or two movies since. And it was product placement because there's a scene toward the end of the movie where he's going to the dance. You know, Mr. Hand appears in his bedroom and he's prohibiting him from going to the dance with his stoner buddies. And he's talking to his friend on the phone prior to that. And he's holding the Vans box and he's digging the shoes out of the box. So it's not like, you know, if you didn't know that they were Vans just by sight, you would know them based on the fact he's digging them out of this box with the logo all over it, right?
Right. But of course, we didn't know about product placement at the time.
Right.
So.
Yeah. It's junk in this kid's bedroom. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, Todd, you mentioned two reasons that we know more about these shoes. Yeah. So, Jeff Spicoli, I think we've exhausted that.
I don't think we could talk any more about Fast Times at Ridgemont High. But on the heels of that development, of the checkerboard slip-on development, a Jamaican ska revival was beginning in Coventry in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And the movement, known as the two-tone genre of ska, it was a fusion of Jamaican ska rhythms and melodies and punk rock's more aggressive guitar chords and lyrics.
Oh yeah, bands like The Specials, English Beat, Madness.
Love those bands.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right, right. Scott's two-tone movement promoted racial unity at the time when political tensions were high in England.
Mm-hmm.
And multiracial bands sang about issues of racism and promoted unity and friendship in the mainstream. And you mentioned the band The Specials. They used a checkerboard pattern as a symbol of racial unity.
Yep, black and white. And yep.
Yeah, yeah. So bingo, the Vans checkerboard slip-on soon became a fan favorite of the subculture.
Right. And of course, the revival of ska was lumped together with new wave as well, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
As this genre gained mainstream popularity, boom, right? The checkerboard is suddenly everywhere. Clothing, videos, graphic design.
Yeah, yeah. The explosion of the checkerboard motif in the 80s was a boon for Vans, no doubt. And as you said, it was everywhere within all these other visual elements. But unfortunately for Vans, the boon was short-lived. The checkerboard slip-on was so popular that they started facing heavy competition from these cheap knockoffs, man, and subpar counterfeits. So the company was forced to lower their prices and take on deep debt.
Yikes.
When I asked you before if you had Vans, I was thinking you were going to say, no, I had the
Kmart
Vans. Jans. I had Jans.
Well, I did have Jams with an M. I did. I
you
love
did have Jams.
Jams,
yeah.
I love those, yeah.
Not long after that boon in 1984, Vans was forced to file for Chapter 11. And although it took 3 years to pay it off the debt, they basically had to start over. And that three-year lack of Vans shoes actually created more demand. They became more sought after.
Mm.
So the new demand was so high, they brought in $50 million in investment. And that allowed them to start expanding internationally as well.
And again, kids, you said 84, right? So this is back before the internet.
That's right.
So this is just organic demand. This isn't any buzzworthy influencer. So what? Yeah. Why did they, do you know why they, so you mentioned it was sort of this mystical thing. It was like this hard thing to find suddenly. And I guess people, like everything else, the counterfeits actually kind of did Vans a favor in that it raised awareness of where this came from, what was the original. And it's almost like the knockoffs that drove them into debt, in a way, kind of did a bunch of free advertising for them too, though, right? Because it kicked off this this new demand.
Yeah, it became more of an authentic brand for Southern California, for streetwear, for skaters. And basically, under bankruptcy, they reorganized to change their business strategy.
Well, as we talked about in our street culture episode, skaters are definitely very tribal. And
yes.
I think certainly in the 80s and 90s, when I was skating, authenticity was really everything, right? You wanted that original. That's why I was like, Airwalk was really the first shoe created specifically for skaters. And that's why I got them like very early in my skating career. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So I can totally understand why people would seek out the originals because, you know, who wanted something you'd get at JCPenney?
Right, right. Nothing against JCPenney if you're interested in being a sponsor of our podcast.
Yeah, we'll talk up both your locations.
Yeah. And again, we can edit that out if we have to, but if you're hearing it, no call from JCPenney.
Todd, they can't afford lawyers.
Oh my God, you're just I just want to say one more thing. So the checkerboard pattern that Vans popularized, it lives on. We still see it. And today, even more popular. It's on runways and high-end fashion boutiques like Louis Vuitton and Fendi and Gucci and Chanel and many more.
So all the brands you wear on a daily basis.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I spend a lot of time on their websites.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, your drip is exceptional, your bar drip.
Oh, thank you. You know, although wrapping it back around to what we were talking about, Vans and the checkerboard slip-on continue to thrive today. They're celebrating their 60-year anniversary in just a couple years.
I'll take a look and see if I can find. There was a great article in the New York Times a year or two ago in the business section. It was the CEO of Vans, and it was a great story. I'll see if I can track it down.
Oh, cool! Yeah,
you know. And speaking of tracking stuff down, Todd, look at this glass. Do you hear anything rattling around or sloshing around as I'm shaking it?
No.
Yeah.
No.
You know why?
Why?
It's empty. So why don't you make my empty glass history by heading over to the bar and getting us a couple new drinks?
I was wondering when that was going to pop up. All right, folks. We got a second half coming up. We're just going to take a break here, and we'll see you back in the bar.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, we want to take a moment to mention that if you're enjoying this episode, we have an archive of topics ranging from the Olympics to movie posters.
Think Ghostbusters.
Iconic images.
Think Bigfoot.
Punk music.
The Ramones.
Saturday morning cartoons.
The Pink Panther.
And failed products like OK Soda. Visit our website at twodesignerswalkintoabar.com for full episode notes and visuals, the latest blog content, and to sign up for our newsletter.
Follow us on social media. We can be found on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Find the links on our website or search using the phrase Two Designers Walk Into a Bar.
Most importantly, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more people like you find podcasts like this.
And tell a friend about us. Send them a link to our podcast from your listening platform of choice.
And if you're inclined, buy our merchandise. Stickers, coasters, magnets, t-shirts. We're designers. We make good stuff, and it helps support the show.
Get in touch. Use the contact form on our website or send an email to hello@twodesignerswalkintoabar.com.
We read every message we get, honest.
And we're available for speaking gigs. Email us to learn more.
Okay, now back to the bar.
Okay, so we're back with fresh cocktails, thanks to our friend Todd here. Much appreciated. Muchas gracias. So we were just talking about the New Wave period and the impact on clothing. And you were saying it was bold and unconventional. Your words. I'm turning your words back on you here. So you told us that New Wave fashion was art school experimental, quote unquote.
I love that.
Yeah, I'll bet you do. And an icon of New Wave fashion was the Vans checkerboard slip-ons.
That's true. And that was just one. They say necessity is the mother of invention, or a crisis yields great art.
I've never heard that last one, or at least not as it relates to this podcast.
Sure you have.
I feel like we have a crisis every time we record.
Oh, okay. Another major fashion icon of the New Wave period, though, Elliot, developed due to a major need. Even caught a crisis, as a matter of fact, specifically a major quartz crisis of the late 70s and early 80s.
Quartz? Quartz crisis?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, this sounds serious. So was there like some kind of a sand shortage or something?
Well, no. It was only a crisis to the traditional mechanical watch industry. The quartz crisis took place amid the post-war global digital revolution.
Okay. Some would know it as the third industrial revolution, I guess.
That's a good way to look at it. This, I'm doing air quotes, crisis was not actually a lack of quartz. It was growing use in watches. So that started with the Astron, which was really the world's first quartz watch. That was introduced by Seiko in December of 69. And what that means is, unless you're like majorly into watches, you may not know that before that, watches were all mechanical, had like 91 moving parts, and they were then replaced by electromechanical and quartz clock movement. And then, of course, digital displays like LED watches, they started coming on, and these watches were more accurate than the mechanical timepieces and generally lower cost too. So back to what we were talking about. In 1983, that crisis reached a critical point in the Swiss watch industry, which had 1,600 watchmakers in 1970, had declined to just 600 watchmakers.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, you know, okay. Swiss is known for their watches, right?
And chocolate and knives.
And cheese.
And Alpenhorns.
Yeah, okay. And what were you going to say? I interrupted you.
No, it was nothing important, except to say, Todd, I thought we were talking about New Wave fashion. I mean, little detour into Switzerland is scenic and lovely, but what the hell's going on?
Okay. Yeah, you're right. You're right. So a response to the quartz crisis from the traditional mechanical watchmakers in Switzerland, the predecessors of what is now the Swatch Group, they formed by a merger. And, you know, those companies were failing. And not that any of us were aware of the particular holding company brands, but it was ASUAG and SSIH. They wanted to move to more quartz crystal watches. And the new entity that would become Swatch was founded in 1983 by three guys, Ernst Tompke, Elmer Mach, and Jacques Mueller. I mean, how's that for a trio? I love those names.
I like that.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the Pep Boys?
Yeah, that's right. That was the Swiss version of the Pep Boys. But just real quick, people may know this. The name Swatch is actually a contraction of second watch. Because these watches, they were inexpensive, they were meant to be casual, they were meant to be disposable.
Yeah, right. You weren't supposed to be able to. That's why they were just made from plastic or
right,
whatever.
Right, right.
Ditch them. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how they were going to compete with traditional European watchmakers who focused on like the craftsmanship of mechanical watches. This ultimately revived the Swiss watch industry and given a boost to all brands, as a matter of fact. And in 1998, a few years after, that made the Swatch Group the largest watch manufacturer in the world.
Yeah, I think as we're sitting here talking, it's so funny that people think of Swatch watches, which are still huge,
by the way.
Especially in Europe and in bigger cities in the U.S., there are Swatch stores. But they think of them as, like what you said, these cheap, plasticky, disposable things. And I think Swatch makes the guts for something like 90% of the watches coming out of Switzerland.
Yeah.
Like they make, you know, the movements for all these high-end brands.
Right,
it's really, really funny that you're buying a glorified Swatch.
Right. Like Volkswagen owns Porsche and
Lamborghini.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. But the first collection was 12 Swatch watches. That was introduced on March 1st in 83 in Zurich. And initially, check out these prices. The prices range from $39.90 in Swiss francs, which was roughly about $46, to about $49.90 in Swiss francs. And soon they stabilized it. They had a standard price that was 50 Swiss francs, which today that 50 Swiss franc watch would cost $176.38. And obviously Swatch became a darling for marketing, and this campaign to introduce them as a relatively low price, it made them gain instant popularity. And in 1997, the Swatch Groups opened about 60 stores, I think, worldwide.
When I bought my Swatches, and I did have some Swatches, and I loved Swatches, you know, just two quick things. Mine were a lot less than $176.
Right. I mean,
they were like, if I remember correctly, they were something like $30.
Yeah, that's what I remember as well.
But the other thing, people are so hot on, for example, Apple Watch right now, right?
Right.
The fact that you can swap out bands and you can have custom colors and all this stuff, you know, digital faces, digital movements. Really, in my opinion, Apple totally stole a page from Swatch's playbook from the 80s. I mean, the whole thing about Swatches is they were all standardized.
Yeah.
And they actually sold aftermarket bands. And you remember Swatch guards, the little guards that would
the
go over the face.
So you
wouldn't,
things, yeah.
Yeah, so you wouldn't scratch the face of the watch. And I mean, they banked it. I mean, and that's why they were such a great fashion accessory, because they were in all these bright colors. They were easy to find, easy to buy. I mean, they sold them not just at Swatch stores. They sold them everywhere.
Yeah.
And you could also do things like, if you had a Swatch that was cool and then your friend had one, you would like trade pieces of the band. You might keep half of yours and then the other person would have the other half. And so this mishmash that you were talking about earlier with clothing and slamming different things together. I mean, it was right there on your wrist. It was amazing.
You're right. They were fashion statements. And back in the excessive 80s, people were no longer wearing a single watch. You know, they were wearing three or four, five or more Swatches.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, it wasn't about telling time, even though this is pre-cell phone.
Right.
I mean, that was how you told time if you're out and about and needed to know what time it was. But it was really, of course, about telling people what time it was in terms of your fashion sense.
Right. And since we mentioned in a previous episode about New Wave that we were becoming all more globally aware, it was common to set your Swatch watches to various time zones. Like, we could pretend we needed to know correct time in Minsk or somewhere like that, you know?
Well, you know, if you have your favorite band or whatever, and they were from country X or whatever, you could just set it to that time, be like, oh, well, I know what time it is for Duran Duran right now.
Yeah, that's right. It was kind of like a status symbol, wasn't it? All right, so let's wrap up talking about Swatches by talking about their lasting influence. So I was just talking about 1987, they opened about 12 stores. So how's about this for a lasting influence? At their height, they had around 7,900 stores globally.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, probably twice as many in Asia than in the U.S. and the U.K.
Mm-hmm.
And today, the Swatch Group, you mentioned this a minute ago, they own 17 watch and jewelry brands, including luxury brands that have been around forever, such as Blaupunkt, Breguet, Gachot Original, and Harry Winston. Not to mention ones that you might be more familiar with, Omega, Hamilton, and Tissot. And they have now well over 1,000 designs available.
Oh, yeah. And they also do these collaborations.
Yeah,
I mean, you would get
with artists.
All these, yeah, with artists like Keith Haring watch bands and all this sort of stuff. Like, very pop.
Yeah.
They knew their lane, right? And just like what you were saying earlier with the blank Vans.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people saw Swatch watches as a canvas, and they took full advantage of it.
Yeah.
And then they would do these limited runs of stuff, and it became collectible.
Right. They were not only fashion accessories, they were a way for us to express ourselves with what we thought was also a practical timepiece, too. So, yeah, they were very cool. And if you check out their site today, and they're not sponsoring the podcast, but hello, Swatch. hello.
Just don't get your Swatch at JCPenney.
I know. Yeah, don't, because they're not going to like that from us anyway. but, you know, here's kind of like a cool, like it paid off for them, right?
Oh, yeah.
They tapped into gold there because since 1983, the company has shown a profit each year up until 2021, where they posted their first loss in 40 years to the tune of 53 million francs, which is about 60 million U.S. And can you guess why?
Well, I would say probably two things. Mm-hmm. One might be COVID, so people weren't laying their hands on this stuff as much. But I would say the other reason is one of the things I mentioned earlier. I think their younger brother, Apple, came along and probably started to steal their thunder a little bit.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That's because Swatch stores were very popular in airports. And people weren't traveling by air. The other thing was there was a lot of unrest, if you remember, in Hong Kong around that period. And Asia was such a gigantic market for Swatch that they decided to close stores there. So, you know, it was a little bit of a hit, but they bounced back. Today they have about 7,500 stores worldwide and are still the largest watchmaker in the world. And that's not bad for a little new wave fashion upstart, I would say.
I'll freely admit that whenever I'm in an airport or in a city or a train station or somewhere and I see a Swatch store, I always go in it. Because I always just want to see what's going on and what they have happening.
It's always changing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're sort of in a lot of ways the first pop-up store, sort of.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they were very smart, very ahead of their time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so not bad for a little new wave fashion upstart, you said, you know?
Yeah.
I'll say we love a good little upstart, don't we? So
we do.
You know, I have an idea. We can do our own startup. And how about we start by you getting up and getting me a fresh drink?
Oh, my gosh. I didn't see that one coming. All right. All right, folks. Thanks for listening. Check out some of our other episodes on New Wave and send us your comments, your reviews, your $20 bills, anything you can to help me pay Elliot's bar tab.
Yep, and I'll post the beautiful quartz glass that Todd presents my cocktail in.
All right. See you, everybody.
Welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. and together we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.
Two Designers Walk Into a Bar is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcasts Network.
For more information about our show or to discover more podcasts you'll enjoy, visit evergreenpodcasts.com.